Accession number 29909, reel 5.
Jim Last, reel 5. How did you get back from Norway?
Oh, we were left behind. For, this is what I want to know. Us 10 were left on that hill. The 49th did left. And this destroyed, we see the convoy go. I wasn't very happy, you know, with a mount up there. But we had to destroy everything they'd left, I told you. And then we went down to the beach to this destroyer. And I think it was the H-38 Southampton. I'm not too sure. But I said, when we got to it to come home, I said, Gilly was missing, remember? And they said he'd wandered into Sweden, you know, and they knew. How the heck they knew on that destroyer, how they contacted that, I don't know. I don't know how. They again, see, you don't know what goes on. But I came home on a destroyer, you know, to England on that destroyer. And of course, the 49th Div had gone. That's why this business of the dispatches was hopeless, because the division had gone. When I got back to England, I went to go and I think I went to Halifax and had disembarkation leave. But I went back to Holdings and not back to the division, you see. So therefore, I was in Halifax Holdings when they called out the fellow's name, and the same as I, he didn't turn up, he didn't come back, you know, with dirt or what. And because he was in heating and, you know, what I was involved with, and they put me down as that. And they called me out, and I was straight back to Iceland within days, you know, coming home from Norway, you know. Well, you could see that on that date. Look, you look at when I come home from Norway and look where I went to Iceland. How long was it?
What happened in Iceland?
Well, they sent me there because this here hospital at Thingvellir they were building, and because I was involved with that side of life, you know, they knew. And this hospital in Thingvellir, they wanted to, they sent me, and I was involved. But it was a 10-inch circuit going out of this geyser onto there, and I want no stovepipe welder. So I went into the stores, you know. I didn't do too, you know, that was all right. Bit of a laugh there, though, really, because talk about cowboys and Indians. Reykjavik, on Saturdays, the Yanks brought in a boatload of hobos. And on Saturday night, you never heard such a racket in your life. The ruddy hobos were chasing the red caps around this here ruddy building. You know, talk about cowboys and Indians. You know, they were acting fine, you know. And they round the boogers up and put them on a boat and took them off, you know. That was, you know, they were tramps. They actually picked up these hobos in America and they couldn't do nothing with them. Yeah, that was a bit of a joke, that was. You know, what the hell was going on? And this here, I suppose it was their hall in Reykjavik, this their white building again. And the red caps would go around and these were chasing them around. They were shooting at them. I rounded them up and took them off. Well, it wasn't bad there. I met Helgi Magnusson, I tell you, Magnus' family. They had a big tannery there where sheepskins and bearskins and all that sort of malarkey. You know, I went down and had a look. That wasn't too bad. There was no trouble, you know, not in that score going on. But I come back and I got involved with Shellhaven, I think, then. That was naughty.
How were you treated by the Icelandic population?
Icelanders? Oh, okay, because me being in stores, I don't say no more. Especially Helgi. Have you got any? I won't say no more about that. No. I'm feeding these here builders right and left, you know. Oh, they're doing that all right. I didn't understand the pattern, truly. The Americans were loading the stores in there. Well, huge. Building equipment, I couldn't understand, you know, but the civilians were coming in with trucks and loading themselves up. What the heck? I don't know what they were doing. I presume they were supposed to be on a hospital, but I wouldn't know. That we didn't know. Oh no, they were friendly enough, all right. Say that. Oh, Helgi was all right. I sat in his Cadillac there. And, yes. A funny setup, really. I didn't mind it there, really, you know. A fine bunch there. There's one there. Yeah. What about Kern? But that there nappy place there, where these here fellas what were going up to Archangel with this here convoys, I did talk a bit, because I tell you, I think there was a hell of a lot of boats there one day, and they ran into a nest of subs, and I think half of them copped it, you know, because that thing about the hospital was stacked, and some of them poor buggers have been floating about in the water, you know, for a long time. Oh, this is some sight. Well, yeah, I was involved in one myself there when I was going to Norway. That one, just the same. I don't know what's happened. I suppose I've had a dinner delivered. 1 o'clock.
What happened when you returned from Iceland?
I went down to Shellhaven. There's an article of that. You got that, haven't you? Yes. Well, I got involved with that tanker and that, you know. And that was naughty. What we were doing in there, don't ask me, because I'll tell you. When them planes came over because of that tanker on fire, the poor damn fireman, I watched two commit suicide. I don't know if that's on there. But what they do, they climb up on the outside of them, or the great tanks, onto the top. So to open the valve to let the air in so they can empty the tank, I don't know. I can't, you know. But I've got a feeling that's what it was. And the trouble is, being the heat that was around there, the fuel just, you know, evaporated into gas, more or less. So the minute he opened that valve, there was a hell of a... And next minute there was a ball of flame, and he was in the middle of it. I see two of them do that. They practically committed suicide doing the bad thing. You know, it was terrible. You know, the firemen, look, they had a hell of a time, you know. I mean, them poor beggars in London, I mean, all right, they wasn't in the war, but, you know, they certainly had their handfuls, you know. Well, they did. Because there were 16, you know, them big tanks, 16 of them alight for a fortnight. You know, because I don't know how many planes we had over that bloody tanker coming in. There were several planes, you know, and they give us a tidy whack, and the beauty of it was some tidy great steel pipes which we could more or less get into. That's the protection we had. Because Jimmy Goodell, I'll never forget him. He's all right. He's folks left him a marina in Guernsey. He was in, yeah, you could say they're all bloody money brackets, some of them. Well, I hope he's still around. But when I went back in the house, the roof had been slid round, you know, the bombs going off. And Jimmy was underneath a butcher's block. How the hell he got under it, I don't know. You know, these thick blocks, you know, with four legs. He was under it. Well, it would have saved him, I suppose, if I had seen. But they had a hell of a job to get out of. I always remember that, you know. That's the silly things you remember, which, because I did try to contact him, you know. I've not been to Jersey or Guernsey. I sometimes thought I would like to have gone, but it was all bad across the Del Sol and stuff. Well, Paris and Holland and Belgium. Belgium, yeah. We've done the lot, because we used to have weekends. I used to go away Friday nights down to Paris. But I never took the car over. I used to park the car at Dover and get a coach. That's it, it was going to the Tower, Versailles and Sacré-Cœur. Have you done that part, Paris at all? No? And we'd done that, well, two or three times down there. We got a friend. We were involved, we got a letter in there, another ruddy millionaire. But we got, you know, don't get me wrong, it's just because we floated around like we did, we got involved. Because going into Paris, well, going into Dover, waiting for our tickets, and the fellow shouted over, Paris? I said, yes, okay. And she got up with her daughter. She said, are you going to Paris? Well, I can eat it. I said, yes, I was there last week. Well, I was, but because of my bloody son, the two of them went to Ponton's camp. Me and Joy went there on our own. When we come back and said we'd been up the Tower and all that, well, I wish we'd have come. I said, oh, bugger. And I said, the money was no problem. And Friday night, I had an estate, every estate that time of day. And I'd go away at 8 at night and drive through the night into Dover and catch a coach. And that coach trip was £28. That was the Tower, Versailles and the Seine and Sacré-Cœur. And you went like Saturday night. Sunday night, because she was up Sacré-Cœur 1 o'clock in the morning, sort of thing. You know, doing that coach trip for £28, not even £28 that time of day, but £28. But the point is, you got where you wanted to go. You take the car over there, be lucky if you found, but you know what I mean. Versailles or anything like that. And I took him down and she got up and said, you know, can we come with you? I said, certainly. So I got my son, and he was the same age as her daughter. We went into Paris and around Versailles and done the lot. And when she finished up, like, you know, you do when you've been out and enjoyed yourself. Come to, you know, where she lived and all the rest of it. Oh, my God. She lived on 1002 King George Highway, British Columbia. And her income was $750,000 a year. Sitting doing nothing. Because she got an 8-bedroom apartment on the banks of the river, where out of the banks of her property went salmon traps. But they caught the souls. The factories came and collected them, and she got the money. Nice income, wasn't it? You know, she didn't do a bugger all for it, because the salmon caught the souls, you know, and the factories picked them up, and she got the bloody money, you know. But her eldest daughter and husband, bought a place in Croydon, because they want to tour England and Europe for 12 months. Bought that place temporarily. See, they were in that bracket.
What happened to you after Shellhaven?
Oh, I took that bond out. What happened at Shellhaven, that mess, it turned round and sent me and Jimmy to Bulldog to collect some explosives. We took a 1500 weight. And we went round and coming back, partly, you know, 10 o'clock at night sort of thing, coming along on that Telford bypass, we ran out of ruddy petrol. And we just passed the camp, so we parked and we got a jerry can with the idea of going up to the camp and get some petrol so we could, you know, get out. And what happened is we went up the road, I said, Jimmy, I better go back and wipe them ruddy rear lights. I said, you can't see the ruddy truck, because the rear lights that time of day were a lot small and didn't want to dust the mud and they weren't the light at all. I went to go, but this ruddy car beat me, hit it right in the back. Of course, the cruel part was, them people didn't live another 20 or 30 yards on the right. And they went straight into this truck. Well, they made a hell of a mess, the girl did, her face was, you know, cut about with the windscreen business. And the parents were shook up. We got them out, took them to their house, ditched their car, because that was a ruddy write-off, and made our way back to camp, which was about 4 o'clock in the bloody morning. And in the morning, we got called out mossing again. What's the matter with the back of the truck? We said, a civvy car hit it. A civvy car? I said, yes. Right, he said, you two had better take the voluntary person. I said, oh, we copped that. Because they didn't like to be involved with civilian, you know, well, that's what it, you know, cut down to. So, we had embarkation leave, we went to ruddy Liverpool, across to the Bahia, down to Monte de Vale, met all the ruddy crew off of Glass Bay. They were all in ruddy civilian blue shirts and trousers, you know, we couldn't make out who the hell they were, but he took them off, you see.
Did you know the Glass Bay was there?
Well, we didn't know nothing about it, of course we didn't. We only knew about it when Ron done the story, you know, and when... I picked this up, and that's why I'm so wide open. What the hell it was all about? Yeah, that's the grass, right? See, I've done that trip.
What ship were you aboard?
Empress of Japan. That's on the sheet. But, you know what? See, that bit is what you've got. It's what this ruddy fella done. Oh, there's that volunteer bloody thing. That's him what gets me involved, but he still dresses up in that bloody gear. And that, a witness to history, they are not. That's a false claim, isn't it? That's why, you know, he was doing them. Plus, I was looking in the library at bloody books, you know. And that's what escalated me into all this bloody business, you know.
Were there any incidents on the voyage before you got to Uruguay?
Well, we had to go into Bahia because I think there was subs around. There was something on the go because the way it was, the ship was a beautiful liner that, you know, it was to Japan. And he's got a photo of it in there. And she shifted. But while we went, slid across to Bahia, because I got a feeling there were some subs in that Atlantic, you know. Well, I know there was, because when we got down to Monte de Vejo, there was a bit of a sort out going on down there before we went out of it across to Durban, you know, South Africa. Oh, there was a bit going on, because one of our battleships, which I thought was the... You know, I didn't know about this dwarf spade business, only what Ron brought up, you know. And I remember seeing all these fellas in this blue outfit what had been turned in, you know, to the Uruguay, because he turned them off the boat and took it out and scuttled the bloody thing. Well, we saw all the crew, you know. And as he said, I was just a witness to what happened. I wasn't actually into the battle. I didn't want him to get that impression because there was no firing about there. But we were involved with seeing the crew off the thing and where it settled into the bay in Monte de Vejo, you know. We saw all its routes and Durban. It went across to Durban, the Gulf, mate. Actually, we followed all its route, you know. It went into Bahia, and then it went down, and that's when it kept sinking all these bloody ships, you know. And when we went into Monte de Vejo, well, we don't know what's going on, we ain't got a clue. I mean, we still haven't, you know, and we were parked in there, I don't know, for a couple of days or something like that, and got sorted out. But there was a battleship on the go, in and out. So what was going on? There was something going on, but you ain't got a bloody clue what's going on, you know. And then eventually we went across to Durban, and then we were allowed off the boat at Durban for 4 hours. And Durban, I thought, was a smashing place because the tower blocks in there, like Spain business, they're terrible against Durban, because Durban, all the tower blocks are pure white. But if you go about 100 yards inland, you was right in the bush, and there was the blacks running about topless, you know, that fascinated the fellas to see these men go running around showing everything I got, you know, a bit of a joke. We had a few hours up there. Then I went off up to Bombay. And the funny thing about Bombay, it's a hell of a small world. Because when I come off that boat, there was a couple of girls who were getting on, got Dixies and dishing out cups of tea. That was in Bombay. I met them at Ilfracombe in Devon. And it's marvellous, isn't it? I was on holiday there, and I don't know what brought the subject up, but these two, well, I mean, you know, in the 30s, like, and I don't know what the subject brought up, but they brought up some, oh, yes, we was living it. Their father was in the Indian, well, in the army, because we had a certain amount of occupation there, you know, and their father was, you know, regimental-like, and they said they are on the quay just in that cup of tea. I said, good God. I said, you dish me one out. I said, because when I went in there Christmas Eve, I said, well, the day before that, when we embarked, I disembarked, a couple of girls, she said it was us. Bloody hell. Small world when you get talking around.
Why was it that you went down to South America?
Pardon?
How was it that you went down to South America rather than round the coast of Africa?
Well, in this Empress Japan, we went from Liverpool, across the Bahia, South America, right down into Monte de Vale. Monte de Vale, we were there a couple of days, like, I don't know, some, you don't know what's going on, because, well, of course you don't. There was something going on, because this battleship was on the move in and out sort of thing. And then, well, 2 days in Monte de Vale, because we were fascinated by the other kids coming, jumping in the water, coming over to the boat for what they could get, because the fellas were throwing stuff in the water to them. But what I saw was about three or four really great sharks basking on the edge of the bank, you know. So they must have known it wasn't really feeding time, you know. It didn't bother them. They were, we could see these sharks and couldn't understand why they were jumping in that bloody water like they were, you know. But they did. And of course, these fellows on the boat were throwing stuff into them, you know. And that's what happened. Then we saw these fellows in blue and shirts and trousers, and we knew it wasn't a uniform, but we still didn't know that was a crew off the Gaspé. Of course we wouldn't, we didn't know. Till Ron, you know, done that story and said all about the Gaspé and whatnot. See, I'd learnt things afterwards. What I'd done, I didn't know at the time. But that's it. Had a couple of days, I suppose, in Monte de Vale, then went across to Durban. I think we had about, whether it's fuel they stopped for, I don't know. And we had 4 hours off, you know, with the ladder disembarked for 4 hours, I think, something like that, to wander around, you know, and back onto the boat, then across the Bombay, and then I went into the hospital boat in Bombay over my bloody knee, and I lost Jimmy. I was a bit naughty all on my own. I was only bugger on the boat as far as it goes. And then when my knee was all right, I was, you know, discharged. Then I caught a smaller boat that went across where all these naval bods, what, you know, got the money for the store, so up in the coast there, because I have that strip of water, to go up the River Tigris to Basra. As I got, I always got on the deck. When I got on the deck, going up the River Tigris, I was talking to two or three fellas. One of them says, a bloody mess. Like a lot of logs, you know. So as far as they looked, my book, they got something and chucked them, and they shot apart. They were crocodiles. I didn't know there was crocodiles. I had all sorts of crocodiles. Well, it was Australian sort of business, you know, but there's crocodiles in that there River Tigris, you know. And the laugh was, we got up and got into Basra, and I met my mate. And I said, I got involved with them Indians making that ruddy mincemeat stuff, you know. I told them where they burnt the bloody selves, you know. I made up the mince trays, Well, big trees, not mince pies, but trees. So they cut it up. But as I say, that's where we was involved with the rifles being stolen. And they were issued a few rounds. They encircled the camp. And the beggars come sneaking in the camp under them blankets, you know. They thought they weren't seen, but when the searchlight got them, they all let a few rounds off at them. But you see, that was the Shiites then. See, they were, what were, did they want the rifles for, you know? How did they go and shoot the others, you know? No more what they're doing now.